Another way to practice objectivity is to move the muscle. No matter how bad we feel, how bad our nerves are, we can always move the muscle. We can always do something. I remember about 2 years ago, I had a long distance call from a friend of mine, another part of the country, and she was in a panic. And she said, "Father, I'm just in a terrible mess and I can't do anything about it." I said, "What do you mean you can't do anything about it?" Well, she said, "Father, I can't. I just simply can't." I said, "Now, wait a minute. You called me, didn't you?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Well, did you pick up the phone?" She said, "Yes." "And you dialed it?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Yes." "And you gave me the operator my number?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Well, that means just one thing, that you have hands, feet, lips, tongue, which can move if you want them to. You can move the muscle. Now, all you have to do is once more put down the phone, hang it up, then pick it up, dial his number." She had gotten in a mess with some fellow, and thought she was in love with him, and now she found out she wasn't, and she was panicky. Well, she couldn't do anything about it. So I said, "Take the phone, call his number, and say, goodbye." The amazing thing is, she did. She moved the muscle. Then the next technique is self-analysis. Now, this is not inventory. Self-analysis or self-diagnosis is never objective. Even the Romans knew that. The Greeks knew it. They had a saying, "No one is a judge in his own case." Therefore, the one who thinks they know more than the doctor, or more than the clergyman, or more than the psychiatrist, they are not objective. Then the next practice of objectivity is hesitation is fear. And any action will gradually control or eliminate fear. Fear in the alcoholic in the beginning. Why were we afraid? Some of us didn't know. But action on this alcoholism took care of a lot of the fear. Fear in approaching AA. We hesitated, and thus we got afraid. Fear in taking the 12 steps. A fellow or a gal comes to AA, she hesitates in taking the 12 steps, then she becomes afraid. Fear in taking the third step. We're afraid that having found God, we might have nothing else besides, like the character in the Hound of Heaven who said, "I fled him down the nights and down the days, in the labyrinths and ways of my own mind I sped, lest having found him, I would have nothing else besides." We're afraid. Our approach to God, we're afraid. Now, there's two types of fear in life. Intellectual fear, emotional fear. One's objective, one's feeling. Intellectual fear tells us of an evil that is present. It is present, and if we act contrary to it, we will not be hurt. For example, the soldier going into battle. He's afraid. He has reason to be afraid. But if he goes into battle anyway, no matter how he feels, he'll conquer the fear. And many, many thousands, millions of people have done this in the wars down through the ages. Emotional fear is not based on fact. It's not objective. We're afraid of something that is not endangering us. And there, that is eliminated by ignoring it. Ignoring it. Emotional fear will retreat before neglect. Emotional fear will retreat before neglect. If we analyze it, take it apart, talk about it, it will remain and grow more and more. If we neglect it, ignore it, it will dissipate. Then the next practice of objectivity is, don't take yourselves so damn seriously. Now, you have that in AA. Many of the club rooms have that on their wall. And that, too, is a very important technique of controlling emotional problems. Why is the neurotic so mixed up with his emotional problems? Because he thinks he is in the middle of his universe, and everything that has happened affects him. Whereas actually we're just one little speck. We're not even a big speck in this world of millions and billions of people. Think of the Chinese, the communistic Chinese have 1/4 of the world's population, 400 million people, and we think we're big shots. Again, the ability to see through things. Now, recovery tells us the way to handle this is don't make a federal case out of everything. Look in your laws today of mankind, and there's not too many federal cases. There's a lot of state laws, city, municipal laws, but there's few federal cases that we come in contact with. And that also is in life. Don't make a federal case out of everything. And that's our trouble. Something happens, which objectively is a very small thing, but we make a big federal case out of it. Why didn't he shut up? Why did he call me that for? So forth and so on. Who's hurt? I'm all disturbed. I'm emotionally upset. Maybe end up in a fight. I might even end up in jail. I don't know. Don't make a federal case out of everything. Then the next one, anticipation is not harmful if it is calm and not fearful, if it is expectant and not despondent. Now, a lot of people say, well, isn't that getting away from the 24-hour program? No. The 24-hour program in AA says, yesterday is gone, tomorrow may never come, I have only today to do something about myself. But this says you can also look forward to tomorrow, provided it is with calm and not fear, if it is expectant and not despondent. There's a world of difference between the two. You take the fellow or the gal who looks to tomorrow and she says, oh, I'll never be any good. I'll never be well. I'll never get sober again. I'll never be well emotionally, physically, or what have you. Of course she won't. She says so. You know what recovery calls this? Recovery says that is prognosis. And there's only one person in this world has any business to give a prognosis, and that's the doctor, the psychiatrist, or the clergyman, not ourselves. If it's a moral problem, then the clergyman should give the prognosis. If it's a physical problem, the doctor should give the prognosis. If it's a mental, emotional problem, then the psychiatrist should give the prognosis. If we give it, then we are committing what recovery calls sabotage. What we're doing, we're taking away from the hands of these experts what is supposed to be theirs and not ours. Then the next one is, be tolerant towards our own mistakes. This is so important. So many people, even after they've sobered up and gotten well for a while, and then they blow their stack, and then they get mad because they got mad. You know, it's not such a bad thing in life to get mad, but you're in trouble when you get mad because you got mad. Have the courage to make mistakes. What do you think they put erasers on pencils for? And to readily admit them. I made a mistake. It's over with. Instead of crying in my own tears of self-pity or criticizing myself. Now, this is the most difficult job you're going to have in life. To forgive yourself. To be tolerant towards your own mistakes. The most amazing thing to everyone in life, as we grow older, is to realize that after all these years, I'm not a whole lot better than I was 10, 20, 30 years ago. I still lose my temper. I still get mad. I still talk about people. I still do the things I did 20 years ago. But you're in trouble when you get disturbed about it too much. Keep on keeping on, day in, day out, but not worrying whether we fail or whether we succeed, because after all, God is not going to worry about it. You know, the human employer demands results. God does not. God only demands it. And I've said this before, and it bears repeating time and time again. When we come to judgment day, it's not going to make any difference whether we won or lost, but how we played the game. That's so true. God's not going to ask us how long we were sober or how sober we were, but how much did I try? And that's the reason you see some of these guys and gals in AA who have slips after slips after slips after slips, and so many other pietistic type individuals who would like to kick them out, you know. But they have goodwill. One of these days, here or hereafter, they're going to make it. Then the next one is the realization that perfection is the rarest of virtues. There are not many people who are perfect in life. Believe. And the few who are, we're not going to know until they're dead at least 25 years, because it takes that long for a person to be canonized. We learn the practice, and again, practice means putting forth the effort, the actions of we doing this day in and day out, the practice of averageness and getting rid of exceptionality. In other words, all of us are average people. Let's face it, this is an average audience. There's nobody exceptional in here. And we get in trouble when we think we're above the group, or below the group, or we fight the group, because then we're being exceptional, not average. And the strange thing is that he who thinks he is above, below, or against the group is exactly the one who is not. He's usually very average. Like the guy who jumped out of the basement window to commit suicide. Then the next technique is practice the will to bear discomfort. The reason many of us are so jittery and nervous is because we cannot bear discomfort. We're looking towards that plateau of no pain, you know. That's the first push towards escapism. Remember in the drinking days? What do you think we were drinking? We wanted to get the plateau of no pain. And the amazing thing is, the more we sought it, the less we found it. The more we tried to avoid suffering, the more suffering we find. And that's one of the enigmas of life. The more one tries to avoid suffering, the more one suffers. Then the next one is, all nervous symptoms are distressing, but they're not dangerous. Therefore, if the doctor is telling me your trouble is nerves, emotions, functional, then no matter how I feel, it's not dangerous. I'm not going to die from it. So keep on keeping on. That goes also in the moral field. If my spiritual advisor tells me that I'm not the worst sinner in the world, I'm not on the road to hell, then I must accept that. And although I'm scrupulous and everything else, I have to keep on accepting somebody's word for it, being objective about it. You know, nervous fatigue actually is a myth. The nerves don't wear out. They sure do distress us much, though, in life. They never kill us. That's the strange thing. But they sure can cause a lot of difficulty. In order to do this, we can practice rejecting tension-causing thinking. And this is very important. And herein, recovery differs from AA in so far that it's more thorough in getting rid of resentment. Because recovery says there's two kinds of resentment. One, angry temper, the other person's wrong. Another, fearful temper, I'm wrong. Both of those causes resentment. The second way we reject tension-causing thinking is to realize that another way that we create tension is by self-analysis. I'm worse than the doctor or the psychiatrist or the clergyman says I am. Another source of tension-causing thinking is expecting danger. Looking for danger everywhere we go. That wall might fall down there. You better watch out. Could happen. Better get out of here. Then finally, the source of tension-causing thinking is looking for exceptionality either in ourselves or others. Now, how do we reject them? We reject them by either denying them or relabeling them. Therefore, if I can't deny it, if it's bugging me too bad and I can't deny it, then I can relabel it by saying, well, it's distressing, but it's not dangerous. So I go about my business. Or I can say it's average, not exceptional, and I can go about my business. So if I can't get rid of these five sources of tension, which I have just given you, and I'll repeat them. Angry temper, fearful temper, self-analysis, expecting danger, and looking for exceptionality in ourselves or others. I can relabel them by telling myself they're distressing and not dangerous. They are average, not exceptional. And then we might conclude by realizing once and for all that objectivity is reality, and reality is objectivity. And the more I accept reality objectively, the less subjective reaction I will have, the less friction, the less emotional tension, the less emotional difficulty, the less danger of difficulty in the drinking field in AA. Because friction, frustration, and all those things lead to that first drink. The emotions, although they are not physical or mental or moral in themselves, the emotions can destroy the spiritual life. They can stunt the physical growth. They can make irrational the intellect of our mind. And they can prevent our return to sanity. So once more, I repeat. Reality is objectivity. Objectivity is reality. And the best way to do that, that's your choice.